Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
I have a very interesting subject to discuss with you today. It's kind of a Christmas or Yom Yeshua. There's different ways of expressing that. Yom Yeshua, the day of Messiah. In Messianic Judaism, as Rabbi Nathan taught so eloquently, that his message about bringing Yeshua back into Jewish space by sharing with us from the book of Daniel, the prophecies which point forward to the coming of the Messiah. And then, of course, the celebration, the Seder on Saturday night, where we're making a real attempt in our neck of the woods of Messianic Judaism to reorient the celebration of this magnificent event, the incarnation of the Messiah coming into the world as a little baby. We're seeking to bring that into our space. And I'd like to continue that idea today. So this is kind of a part two in its own way of this theme, a message with this theme of bringing Yeshua home, bringing baby Yeshua home, if you will. I remember when David was born, it was December of 1977, and we couldn't take him home for a few days because he was a little jaundiced. That was tough. Sue and I remember that very well. But then the baby came home. There's something great about having the baby home. So today we're going to bring the baby home, meaning into home, into the space that he was born into. And I think what I have to share with you, you'll find very provocative and very interesting and hopefully helpful as we work through this subject. So today I would like to talk with you about the Magi. The Magi. You remember there were some Magi. We get the word magic from that word, but these were scholars and astronomers / astrologers who lived in Persia, who lived in the general area where the Babylonian captivity took place. And generally speaking, these are viewed as non-Jewish people who saw certain things in the sky and concluded that God had done something really, really amazing in Judah. And so they took a long trip across the desert and came to Israel, to Jerusalem, to see the baby. I'm not going to go through the whole story with you, but I'd like to reorient the story a little bit and make a suggestion. Quite honestly, I haven't found it in other texts, but it's one of those things that I think is rather compelling and exciting from our point of view. Well, I want to talk with you a little bit about these Magi. They were scholars, and the Jewish philosopher, the famous philosopher from the first century, rough time frame, Philo, speaks of them as very honorable people, real good people. They were in the courts of various kings in the area of the Persian Empire, various rulers, and they, again, were scientists in their own way, but they also were into astrology. Now, God tells us that he doesn't want Israel to be involved in astrology because it can devolve very quickly into a kind of paganism where the sun and the moon and the stars are given the value of deities. And that was a real temptation back in the ancient world. So God said to us, I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to get your information about what's going on from the stars principally or at all, but get it from me. However, this is the most interesting thing, that it seems that God sometimes acts even a little differently from what he states for the purpose of a higher purpose, for the purpose of doing something that's even bigger. And it's rare and it's occasional, but sometimes that appears what's going on. So you have these Magi. Now, in the story in the Bible, what you find is that these guys, having looked in the sky and noted certain things in the constellations, and I'm going to make a suggestion today as to exactly what they saw. Again, I think you'll find it interesting that they then take a long trip to Israel to meet this king of Judah born in the land of Israel, the king of the Jewish people born in the land of Israel. And I want to suggest that These people may have had Jewish background. They remind me of Daniel the prophet. Now, you recall that Daniel, several centuries earlier, had been taken to this general area. He became part of the captivity when the Babylonians captured Israel. He was a faithful Jew in the midst of this pagan environment. I want to suggest that these people may be related to him, if not related, that is, they were part of the same family or anything like that, but nonetheless, part of or the descendants of those Jews who were taken to Babylon, who were assimilated, but we know that some of them from royal families in Israel, when they were taken, they grew up in the court and they became very prominent people. For example, as I mentioned, Daniel the prophet. So you have these people looking up in the sky and doing all this studying, and what strikes me is that they are so motivated to come this long distance after seeing that a king would be born in Israel. That in of itself suggests to me that we don't have just pagan people here. We have, or even non-Jewish people. We have people who in some sense possibly looked back to their own Jewish identity or their own Jewish background, and there was that sense of connection and gravitation, which we see in our own society with some people from Hispanic countries. And we've had folks in our own congregation who can relate to this. People from the Spanish or Portuguese-speaking world who centuries ago were part of Jewish families, but the Inquisition came along and made it impossible for them to continue to live as Jews. And yet, there's a certain almost spiritual genetic connection with the Jewish community that in some cases is manifested by wanting to be involved in the Messianic Jewish movement and recapturing that sense of identity. It can go very, very deep for some people. And not just in the Messianic Jewish community, some have become more mainstream Jews as well. But you have this kind of transgenerational gravitation, this thing that pulls you along. And I've seen it on various occasions, and maybe you have too. So I want to suggest that that's what we may be talking about with the Magi. And what strikes me again is their motivation to come to Israel bearing gifts to the king of Israel. Now again, they lived in a very different place. They were rulers in a different, totally different society. Something had to motivate them. And I'm suggesting what I would consider even a likely motivation. There was some connection with their own past. And from a theological standpoint, I can imagine their coming as a kind of intimation, an intimation of when God takes our people back from the various countries that we've been in, where assimilated Jews who have almost lost it all in terms of their connection with the Jewish world are moved back, come back to Israel and experience the reality of the God of Israel. And in this case, they went back home again, but I see it as this kind of intimation, this subtle suggestion. And all of this, again, puts the experience of the Magi in a more Jewish context. All of a sudden, it doesn't look quite as much like the kinds of things that we experience the way Christmas is normally expressed now. All of a sudden, these three kings, they just look different. And let me say parenthetically before I move on to the second part of what I wanted to say to you, which is related to the Magi and what they likely saw in the sky, which becomes relevant. You'll see why. But I want to say that it's important for us, while we do want to reclaim faith in Yeshua within Jewish space, while it's true that we're trying to celebrate and re-celebrate him and retool our sense of his identity within our understanding, let us not become, as I've seen in some among some Messianic Jews, where there's a kind of looking down the nose at the Christian experience of the birth of the Messiah. This is a very important point. It is true that the art and the music and the iconography and the way of looking at the Messiah and his birth has been expressed in ways that are not really in keeping with our Jewish sensibilities and can cause us to kind of say, well, you know, they just don't get it because they don't see the Jewish roots here. I want to suggest that's a huge mistake to have that mentality. The fact is that in Western civilization, within the culture of the predominantly non-Jewish communities of the West, there have developed these magnificent expressions of art and music and other ways of celebrating this unique person, Yeshua. And thank God that that's what happened. Thank God that there has been this way of expressing his reality within different cultural contexts than we're comfortable with, but let us never look down our nose at it. Let's celebrate the fact and rejoice that the tradition of Yeshua was maintained through that art and through that music and through that iconography. Because where would we be, where would the West be without the tradition of Yeshua? And what my concern is, what's happened in Europe and can happen here, is that when these traditions are set aside and are replaced with a kind of humanistic replacement that doesn't embody the kind of love and compassion and self-sacrifice that we see in Yeshua, doesn't embody Miriam, we call her Miriam, but that doesn't embody the love of this mother for this special child as expressed in the great artists, the great art of the Western tradition. When that's lost, I'm going to suggest that a cold, often mean-spirited attitude toward life and toward important things, which instead of being rooted in the love and compassion of God as revealed in these wonderful expressions, is lost, and something replaces it. So I think of, in France, in Paris, this icon, if you will, of a cube, a big cube on the Champs-Élysées, a big cube that takes the place of this of the face of Miriam looking down at that child. And I say, a cube doesn't say much to me, and I bet it doesn't say much to you either. It's cold. It's mechanistic. And it doesn't embody the kind of love and compassion that becomes especially important when we feel pressure, economic and other kind of pressure. So, end of parentheses, but I don't want our expression of how we do it to occur at the expense of what the Christian world, in its imperfections, we know all about that. We know about the anti-Semitism. We get all that. But I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let us always celebrate the way the church has seen the birth of this special baby. Again, even though it's a bit different than us. Now, part two. I want to spend a little time talking with you about what they likely saw. And this gets very, very exciting. And it is based on, well, a number of scholars have looked at this, but one of my favorite professors during my first graduate program in Philadelphia was Dr. Robert C. Newman, and Dr. Bob, as we called him, was a PhD in astrophysics from Cornell University, did postdoc work for NASA, really bright guy, and a wonderful professor. It's because of his teaching that I reclaimed my own Jewish identity when I was at this seminary because of a course he taught called The Jewish Roots of Christianity. But Dr. Newman, being an astrophysicist, did a lot of work on the computer. They have computer programs now which will allow us to be able to see what the sky looked like 2,000 years ago. They can project back and actually know what the heavens looked like at the time of Yeshua. And what he and others have recognized, but I'm going to just reflect his slight nuances on the way this works itself out, is that what the Magi saw were the planets, particularly Jupiter and Mercury, and the constellation Virgo, the Virgin, and the constellation Leo, and then the sun and the moon, how these things were kind of moved around the way these things occur, and how these things actually had a message that the Magi picked up. So let me take you through this. I'm going to go very quickly. I don't want to take a lot of time. But it goes like this. On August 12th in the year 3 BC, Jupiter is the king planet. In the understanding of people who study these things, It's the king planet. And that planet joins with Venus, the mother. Venus represents the mother, you know, the female image, in Leo, in the lion. Leo is the lion. If you look in the skies, look at the constellation Leo is the lion. And they would have, these magi would have seen the lion, they would have associated it with the Lion of Judah. So here you have Jupiter, the king, meeting with Venus, coming together in Leo. Now, next, on the 26th of August in the year 3, Mercury, the heavenly messenger, comes to Venus, the mother. What do you think that might relate to? Mercury, the messenger, comes to Venus. It would be the Annunciation, it would be the angel, right? We'll talk about this more. Next, on 11 September of the year 3, we have the sun clothes the body of the virgin while the moon is under her feet. And this suggests the child being conceived in Dr. Newman's thing, but it also represents a passage in the book of Revelation where it talks about the woman with the moon, sun and moon under her, clothed with the sun with the moon under her feet. We won't take the time to get into that in too much detail. Moving on to the 14th of September in that same year, and also on the 17th of February and the 8th of May, now in the year 2 BC, Jupiter, the king planet, hovers over Regulus. Regulus is the small star in Leo, which means the little king. The great king hovers over the little king. The suggestion here is this is the Messiah in his mother's womb with the dad, if you will, God hovering over Regulus, the little king. 17th of June, the rare close conjugation of Jupiter with Venus in Leo. At that point, Dr. Newman suggests the Magi set out on their journey. Then on August 2nd, this is very interesting. We have the clustering, and this is very rare, the clustering of the sun and the moon, Jupiter, Venus, Mercury, and Mars, and this means war. Mars, the god of war. I'm sure you're aware of that. The Magi arrive, and Herod makes his move to kill baby Yeshua. Let me just summarize the symbolism of these events in just very, very quickly. So on the 12th of August, 3 BC, the Magi pay attention, a royal birth in Judah, okay? 26th of August, the heavenly messenger informs the mother. 11th September, the conception occurs. 17th of June, the birth occurs. 28th of August, this means war. But the main idea here is that in this case, although God enjoins us, says to us, I don't want you to look into the stars and moon for directions in life, he seems out of compassion for Israel and compassion for those in the diaspora and for the nations, he seems to just say, look, this time I want to communicate something to you. And what it means to us is that when we read the story of the Magi, we're reading about people who very possibly were part of the Jewish community centuries in times before that, but these people seeing that this amazing thing had occurred, and God, the great communicator, revealing these events that are happening at the time through these amazing convergences. And Dr. Newman talks about the unlikelihood of these things ever occurring without divine intervention, and I'll share that number with you. What the unlikelihood of all these things occurring in this way at this time, it would happen every 228,492 years that you would have all of these things come together. What I want to suggest to you is that as we bring Yeshua home, baby Yeshua home, we experience him in Jewish space, but we experience the mighty acts of God and the great communicator out of love for mankind sharing these things about the Messiah. And may all these things just encourage us as this new year starts to really give ourselves to these things, meaning to give ourselves to this wonderful enterprise of helping our people Israel understand who Yeshua is and how these icons and images and all these things, instead of being despised or rejected, they're not ours, they're not our space, but nonetheless to celebrate that the great communicator has revealed something so magnificent to this world. And it's a message that we need now because the world has become a very crazy place. And I just want to suggest that we can have great joy, but also great commitment and great motivation to be committed to the God of Israel, the one who gave us baby Yeshua. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.